Certainly. And now, while split on policy approaches to emerging migration trends, the European Union faces a further divide as member states rush to impose their own individual border controls in order to limit the flow of migrants. Now, with that being said, in your opinion, what do you think that Canada and the United States should do in order to mitigate the crisis from pursuing?
I think we come back to the point that I made at the beginning. You know, when the first arrival of migrants and the refugees started was in the summer of last year, some started to think that this is a regional problem. Well, it's actually a national problem. Italy and Greece were facing some influx of migrants. Then they started to realize that this is not a national problem, it's a European problem, it's a regional problem. But now people are starting to realize that this is a global problem. You know, you have, as I mentioned, 60 million refugees, of which 20 million are outside their own country. Not only that, but you have a huge economic migration pressure because you have immense, I would say, demographic issues in some countries, like in Africa. You have Nigeria, you have Ethiopia, which are, you know, they have very high population increase rates, and they have a weak governance. So people there, they don't have the economic and social opportunities to live a decent life. And this is not going to go away tomorrow. So we cannot tackle this issue from a European perspective or a regional perspective. This is an issue where all countries, and especially all the rich countries, I would say, I'm talking about the US, Canada, Japan, Australia, and the European Union, they have to do more to do this. Not only because of, I would call it, a moral obligation, but also because it's in our interest. When you have instability, when you have, you know, refugee and migration flow, it's very difficult to tackle also the problem of terrorism. Instability is one root cause of it. This is not, no, you cannot stop it at the border. This is a global problem. I think all countries need to address this as a global issue. Now, I think Canada, in particular, has done quite a remarkable thing last year with its commitment to welcome 25,000 refugees. The number itself is not big, but as I mentioned in the panel, the message is powerful. The message that, you know, we are ready to do our part in addressing this problem was extremely important in a very difficult political environment. Many countries, you have populist parties and rhetoric, and Canada opened its door. More can be done, but not this is the way to go.
Certainly, I strongly agree with you in terms of this being a global issue. I think that Canada has certainly done a lot by accepting 25,000 refugees. And I oftentimes present the argument that once you accept refugees, you also have to focus on the integration process. And by that I mean, you know, focusing on programs that would provide the refugees with certain skills in order to be able to adapt to the community. So whether it be providing the refugees with a strong network, providing refugees with accessibility to education, to social services. I think that Canada has done an excellent job in terms of addressing the crisis. And now, with that being said, in your opinion, do you think that certain integration strategies should be further advanced or implemented in order to further assist the refugees?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. We are extremely, interested in Canada's the Canada system of welcoming and integrating the refugees, because the way the Canada works, the refugees are not seen as an obligation or as a way to the economy, but actually as a resource, as an opportunity. They are integrated. They work. They produce, you know, economic output. So they are actually a benefit to the country. And we, as European Union, are certainly interested in this model, which is working very well, I would say. Now, the question, of course, for the European Union is a bit different in the sense that Canada can do this because it is relatively shielded by the influx because of the geographical position. the U.S. to work more on this. Some signs are already emerging. In Germany, I read recently that there are a big number of refugees that are already integrated in some apprenticeship programs, so that they are starting to get integrated in the economic system. This is the way to go. Especially countries which are facing demographic decline or aging problems. Well, refugees immigrants have to be started to be seen as an opportunity, as a positive impact on the country. Provided that, and that's where Canada is really leading the way, that they are well managed and well integrated. I think we are extremely interested in learning more about Canada's system.
Absolutely. And now, Mr. Fantaroni, with your expertise and your background, for all of the listeners who are young professionals today, what is the best advice that you can provide to those who are perhaps interested in pursuing a career as a diplomat?
Advice is difficult. I think it's a worth enterprise. It's challenging. It's rewarding. From time to time, you have the opportunity to do something. More often than not, when you have a success in diplomacy, it's something that does not go into the press. But you see it on the ground, and it's a great pleasure to see that you can manage to do something concrete in diplomacy. So I certainly encourage young professionals to enter the business of diplomacy. We actually need bright young people to bring a new dimension as well to the diplomatic world. And bridges are always important.
Certainly, I agree with you 100%. And over the past year, I had an opportunity to work as the program editor of Global Horizons. I started here at the NATO Association of Canada in September. And over the past months, as I mentioned, I was the program editor of Global Horizons. And throughout that period of time, I had an opportunity to do various interviews with influential members of our community, diplomats such as yourself, government officials, academics, scholars, and people who have made a significant impact. And I can say that from all of the interviews that I've done, I can certainly see diplomacy as a career path that has many rewarding aspects along with challenges. So as a diplomat, for all of our listeners tuning in today, what would you say have been some of your biggest highlights?
Well, that's difficult because, I basically like pretty much everything about the job.
Yes.
So it's difficult to pinpoint one or the other aspect. If I have to think about this, I would say, the aspect I perhaps like the most is the public diplomacy aspect, like the panel that we had in Toronto on the 17th. Because, I like to interact with the public who are not inside the rooms of diplomacy, and they see that this is a separate world. I mean, diplomats are normal people as everybody else. So I like to interact with the public. I find it also that it's a challenging job. That's why it's also rewarding, because it's always challenging to find common ground when you have to deal with countries and people that have different interests and different opinions and different points of view. This is not the case of the UN Canada. European Union and Canada, we are pretty much sharing the same values, the same world vision, the same views on everything. But in other countries, that's not always the case. And the challenge is to try and, respecting the logic of the country and the culture and the background of that country, to bring forward your own point of view and trying to find a common ground. When that happens, I think it's extremely rewarding.
Absolutely. And I think that that provides many opportunities for the public to engage in discussion. And in a similar way, here at the NATO Association of Canada, we put on various events, conferences, and roundtables, which focus on educating the public about international relations, global affairs, and diplomacy. So again, on behalf of the NATO Association of Canada, I want to thank you for being our panelists and also for doing this interview. interview. It's been a complete pleasure to speak with you. Mr. Fantaroni, for all of those tuning in, would you like to share any final words with our listeners today?
Thank you very much for having me first at the panel and then for the interview. What can I say? I would say that, you know, as I mentioned, the EU and Canada, we have, you know, we are very strong partners. It's a pleasure to be here in Canada with, you know, it's one of the strategic partners of the European Union. We have very solid and long-standing relations. These are actually growing by the day, you know, by trade and cultural diplomacy. But we should, you know, there is always scope to do more together, to work more together, and, you know, to address all these complicated challenges that we have in the world today. So this is what I want to share.
Absolutely. And for those who are interested in contacting you directly, what is the best way for our listeners to get a hold of you?
Oh, they can contact the delegation.
Yes.
We have a switchboard, and then they can reach us, whether it's me or my colleagues at the delegation. We are certainly always always open to deal with to interact with the public.
Wonderful. Mr. Fantaroni, thank you very much.
You're very, very welcome, and thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure.
Have a nice day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.